retreat, we're cultivating a quality, this quality of balance, this quality of ease, this quality that gives us the ability to sit with what's arising. It's interesting that when we sit down, take our seat in meditation, to start to observe the mind and just notice the nature of our mental experience can be quite shocking, actually. The Buddha had a word for this. He called folks who are still caught in that process, you know, untrained, because he knew that every single human being has the capacity, has the ability to move beyond that, the caughtness in that kind of loop of suffering. And he used the word ignorance a lot to describe that kind of falling into that pattern. So I'm going to draw it for you. Here's the pattern. The pattern is that, you know, either something's occurring that is the mind finds favorable, we like it, we want it to happen, or something is occurring that the mind finds unfavorable, unpleasant, we don't want it to happen. So that's two sides of a coin, either craving or aversion. And the Buddha kind of smooshed those together under the heading called clinging, because it does not matter if we want to hold on to something or if we want to get rid of it, we're still holding on to that which we want to get rid of. Remember, what you resist persists in the mind. So, that is called clinging. So, what occurs when clinging happens, then we have become that thought. We are that thought. And we believe it to be ourself. This is from the Dhammapada, it's the first verse of the Dhammapada. It says, we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act with an impure mind or unskillful, whatever you want to call it, and trouble will follow you as the wheel follows the ox that draws the cart. We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act from a skillful mind, and happiness will follow you as your shadow, unshakable. And then it goes on and it talks about the kind of nature of the clinging mind, how we get attached to things from the past sometimes. Sometimes we can be sitting and all of a sudden something from the past will come into our mind. I was telling one of the groups that a young man that I work with is a psychiatrist at Yale Medical, and they did a study. He was part of a study that asked meditators and non-meditators to imagine or to recall a time when they were furiously angry. And they recall this time in a functional MRI so that they could see what lit up in the brain. And the non-meditators, what lit up was this sort of line right down the corpus callosum, right down the middle of the brain. But with meditators, something amazing happened. They had this sort of corona effect. So it's not saying that these experiences were gone, but they weren't clinging to them. They were being present for them. So Judd called and he said, "It's true. If we don't meditate, we have a one-track mind." So the rest of this says, and listen to this, this is very familiar stuff. You know, this might have come out of someone's mouth 2,500 years ago, but we are still working with this now. "Look how he abused me and hurt me, how he threw me down and robbed me. Live in such thoughts and live in hate." "Look how he abused me and hurt me, how he threw me down and robbed me. Abandon or let go of such thoughts and live in love. In this world, hate never yet dispelled hate. Only love dispels hate. This is the law, ancient and inexhaustible." So there's a woman who was under house arrest in Burma, Aung San Suu Kyi, who was recently released, and someone asked her, you know, how she felt about her captors and she hated them. And she said, "I don't think that way." That was it. She practices in this tradition. "I don't think that way. Forgiveness is a way of being, a way of being in life." So where there's the awareness, this is very interesting. So craving, aversion becomes clinging. We don't recognize that that's occurring. So there's ignorance. And then there's identification with that. We've become what we think. When we practice meditation, we are in here. I mean, if we could see the mental gymnastics going on in this room, when we are all so apparently peaceful and sitting here, it would be like Gold's Gym on crack. I mean, it's amazing what's going on. Because the Buddha laid down this simple process that means that we are opposing the tonnage of all of our conditioning again and again and again. It's like flowing. And here we are. And we're just going, look at that, anger. Oh, wow. Look at that, fear. Oh, joy. Oh. That's an effort-filled undertaking that cannot be over-efforted. So we're asked to witness this. When the Buddha taught what's called the Satipatthana Sutta, it's the great discourse on cultivating mindfulness, he gave this, I said it the other night, he gave this list that went on and on and on of all these different states, because he wanted people to realize it doesn't matter if it's pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, we sustain this recollection. We observe. We bring in the ability to have this corona-like witnessing of what is arising. We keep tuning into that and retuning and retuning. So there was a monk, his name was Sona. And when Sona, before he became a monk, he was a musician. He played the lute. And he wanted to practice so intensely that he did the walking practice barefoot until his feet bled. And he sat and sat and sat and sat with this incredible, like, fierce intention. And the Buddha picked up on this. He kind of got it that one of his students was going out of balance. And so he went to Sona and said, you know, what's going on? And Sona said, I've been working and working, and I'm still caught in delusion, and I think I'm just going to go home. And the Buddha said, what did you do before you came here? And he said, I was a musician. He said, so if you tune the strings of your instrument too tight, would beautiful music arise from that instrument when you played it? And Sona said, no. You know, it would be too tense and jangly. And he said, and similarly, if the strings were not tuned enough, if they were too loose, what would happen? And Sona said a similar thing. They would, like, flap against the soundboard and beautiful music would not arise. And he said, this too, Sona, in your practice, to bring this quality of balance, to bring this quality of witnessing, so that we begin to see, we begin to create this wedge of awareness. So here's craving, here's aversion, here's clinging, right here. And this wedge of awareness is mindfulness. And all it does is say, there, right now, in this moment, there is whatever here. What's here now? You know, it could be aversion arising from fear. It could be joy. It could be any state of mind and heart. And when we know it as an experience that will arise, exist, and pass, we no longer identified with it. We are simply seeing it as passing show, and we come into that state of witnessing balance, that quality of being. So I'm on a Mahayosananda kick. He says this. He says, the road to peace is called the middle path. It is beyond all duality and all opposites. Sometimes it is called equanimity. Equanimity harmonizes all extremes. Equanimity is like the finely tuned strings of an instrument, not too tight, not too loose. It vibrates perfectly and makes beautiful music. Now, this is the important part of this, because have you noticed that sometimes when we're here on our cushion, that something will come into the mind like judgment or, you know, anger or some kind of fiery state, and we don't want it there. We don't want it to be present in our lives, and we don't want to be present to it. And so we get in a battle with it. We fight it. Equanimity means the absence of struggle. One time, a great elephant jumped into a mud hole to cool off. Of course, he got stuck, and the more he struggled, the deeper he sank. Struggling is useless. It only makes things worse. Do not struggle with your suffering. I can hear his voice in this. Do not struggle with your suffering. Find your own path. This is called taking refuge in the Dharma. The Dharma is the middle path. Before the Buddha began his spiritual journey, he indulged in many kinds of sensual pleasure, but he found no lasting happiness. After that, he fasted for many weeks until he became pale and thin, but he found only pain. Practicing in this way, the Buddha learned that both self-indulgence and self-mortification are extremes, and extremes never bring happiness. Peace comes only when we stop struggling with opposites. The middle path has no beginning, no end, so we do not need to travel far on the middle path to find peace. The middle path is not only the road to peace, it is also the road of peace. So this process of witnessing, awakening to craving, awakening to aversion, seeing them as clinging, and in that recognition, knowing that you are no longer identified, even if it's just for a moment, no longer identified. So let's practice. Imbuing our sitting with this balance and ease, and making a kind of determination, very gentle determination, to be present for what arises, and to just become curious and interested, meet it with this affectionate attention, this quality of friendliness. Allowing the body to reflect that attitude of openness. The body is neither tense nor too loose. Really sensing into this physical body to come into a kind of balance and ease in your sitting. And allowing now the attention to settle very gently with great tenderness on the experience of breath, really sensing the changing nature of breath. In the Satipatthana Sutta, it says sometimes breath will be long, no need to shorten it. Sometimes breath is short, no need to lengthen it. Just allowing breath to be as it is. So noticing the way the breath changes. Noticing and sensing the direct touch sensations that breath leaves in this body as it passes in and out. From time to time, you will notice that other objects are strong enough to pull the attention away from the breath. It could be something as funny as just an itch or a physical sensation. It can be a thought passing through this mind. It could be a sound arising, existing, passing away. To use this wedge of mindfulness to recognize, oh, this is thinking. Oh, this is an itch. And simply to then directly know in a kinesthetic way the experience of itching. To know in a kinesthetic way, the experience of thought passing through this mind, body, heart. When you have sensed this new object in this very balanced way, opening to it with this friendly interest, but also the determination to not become lost in the object, then gently return the attention to the touch sensations of breath once more. So we'll practice in this way until the end of the sitting.